Wearing a Maine Beer Co. shirt, Tim. Okay, I'm not a hater.
Fucking poser.
I'm not a poser. I'm not a poser. All you people who are like, "Oh, lunch is the best Maine ever, ever." Yeah, y'all fucking posers. Not me. I like Kentitis. I like dinner. I like post ride snack. I like
dinner is just a variation of lunch. That's why it's called dinner.
The better version. It's just like Pokemon. You know what I mean? Like the regular one is not really that great, but the evolved one's pretty fucking awesome, right? It's the same thing here. All right, let's go. Season 4, episode 19. Stats to matter. Formula Uno. The NFL offseason's here. We got the combine next week, Tim. Or some version of the football is back. Celtics. Lego. I enter cups this week. It's an Imperial Stout from Greenville, South Carolina. Shout out 8th State and Great Notion. And you have a Weeded Burbs from Frankfort, Kentucky. Buffalo Trace in the house. Follow us on Instagram at StatsTheMatter and on Twitter at StatsPodcast for all things whiskey. Whiskey now. Beer and sports. And find Stats No Matter wherever you get your podcast, Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, Google. Tim, let's get into the show.
Let's go.
Crazy. Obviously, the combine was not next week. It's already happened. Yeah.
I was going to correct you, but I was going to let it roll.
You should. You know, we're a podcast for the people. You know, the people will call us out on that stuff if we missed up. But all right, let's get into this here. You got a Burbs, but I got a Burbs barreled. I don't know if it's bourbon. Usually everything the 8th State does is bourbon barrel, but this is an Imperial Stout with coconut, truffle salt, Cook's Island vanilla, and Peruvian cacao nibs, 13%. That's a little 12-ounce bottle, and the front of it looks like what happened to that guy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when he gets into the acid vat. That's what it looks like.
Oh, no!
Sometimes when they put raw coconut or coconut as the additive to the beer doesn't fully dissolve, right? So then like it flows to the top. So I got some chunks of coconuts floating around. I don't mind it, to be honest, because I love Almond Joys and Mounds, which is I'm expecting that's what this is going to taste like, but let's see.
It's very funny while you're drinking that. It's very funny because Tom Brady came strutting out somewhere not that long ago, like a few days ago, and it made the rounds in my some of my group chats, and someone said he looked like the bad guy from Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
He had like the black the black hat on and everything.
With the glasses.
See if I can find it while you're
Okay. A lot of salt. I was not expecting that. It's good. But Tim, do you know maybe it's just a Northeastern thing and I just didn't grow up this way. People put fucking salt on chocolate chip cookies. Like hard granules of salt.
That's a gourmet thing.
Ugh.
Not a gourmet.
Get out of here with that bullshit. It's sweet. I'm not trying to get salt on top of it. I don't get why people do this. It's salty, but it's also very, very sweet on the back end. I love everything that 8th State does out of Greenville, South Carolina. Of course, Great Notion is fantastic anyways. The stout game, 8th State is pretty much south of Virginia, north of Angry Chair. Which is a large swath of land. 8th State is probably, their barrel program is probably one of the best. It's pretty ridiculous. It's so good. That being said, you know, the salt is just kind of throwing it off for me. I'm going to give this shit a 3.8 simply for the fact that, I mean, it's very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
As a pastry stout or an adjunct stout, you're going to expect to see that anyways. That salt is really just throwing me off. It's like, I can still taste it. It's in my beard now. I don't know how I. Yep, that's exactly what Tom Brady looks like. Yep.
Look, and then I saw that.
It's a derby, right? Yeah, yeah. He looks like a Bond villain there.
Yeah, and then he's like someone actually already drew the comparison there. Yeah,
that's Christopher Lloyd, by the way.
Yeah. That's funny. That cracks me up. All right. I missed the score. What was the score?
3.8
3.8 Okay. All right, poor taste, but all right. all right, so I haven't had a lot of beer around the house as of late. Somewhat conscious, more cost savings now that I have a child in daycare. We have that additional cost, but I still have a fuck ton of whiskeys, so I'm working my way through some of those for the pod. And some of them are going to be your normal everyday guys, some are going to be a little upper shelf, and this is definitely one that's sort of middle upper shelf. I've already had the Masters Keep on. I already had the Van Winkle Lappy. So this isn't quite at that level. This is, you know, a couple notches below, but still pretty phenomenal. This is Weller. It's a weeded bourbon. It's distilled by Buffalo Trace, but it's also one of their higher end versions of it. But for those who like to get out and hunt for whiskeys, this is usually one you'll see move pretty quick on some of the little secondary markets. But 57%, 114 proof. Smells just super sweet out of the right out of the bottle, which is phenomenal. I've had Weller Antique and Weller 107, and I wasn't the biggest fan of the Antique. We did a little blind taste test of the three. So, yeah, spoiler alert, I have had this before. Each bottle is still different because of where the batches are stored and everything. What they don't do with this one, with this wine, oh, yeah, they do. What you have is a little engraved micro print on the bottom. One, it lets you know it's like a real bottle because there's a lot of like secondary, but it also tells you where it was stashed and all that stuff. I don't know how to decipher it without looking it up, but they are all a little different. So if you buy one, it doesn't mean the next bottle is going to taste exactly the same, which is why I don't really mind doing some of these that I've already had before. A great example of that is they just had an Elijah Craig full proof. It was like the C952 or something like that. That barrel was arguably across the board one of the best bottles of bourbon in all of last year. And that's like a $40 bottle. The full proof is a little higher. We'll call it the $60-$70 bottle. But you can get full proof every year. And it's decent. It's not bad. I got two of them in my cabinet. But this one, for whatever reason, stored right, barrel, whatever it was one of the harder whiskeys to get this entire sort of whiskey season. So just something to keep in mind. If you've had it before, give it another go, because it's probably going to be different the next time around. But
interesting. I think I'd have to, I don't know if I can get that around here locally, but I've always been intrigued by that. I didn't know that Buffalo Trace made all of those things.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you trace back a lot of the,
If you
trace back a lot of these bourbons, like Wild Turkey, Knob Creek, like, I mean, a lot of them are distilled by just a handful of big distilleries. But it's the aging process, where they're stored, the grain bill, all of that stuff kind of differs in terms of each line. Like Van Winkle is not its own brand. I'm pretty sure Van Winkle is also another the whiskey's not going to murder me. But yeah, it's also, that's right, because there's a documentary you can watch called Heist, and they're talking about the Buffalo Trace distillery. But that's another one. Buffalo Trace is like a $35-$40 bottle of whiskey that's very good, especially for the price point that gets jacked up in a lot of markets just because it's got that name associated with those higher end whiskeys. So secondary markets want to charge a shit ton. Like Eagle Rare is another one of those. But it's perfectly fine. It's good if nothing else. But yeah, as you work your way up the list, then they start going $100, $400, thousands of dollars or whatever. But at the end of the day, the base of it's all still very similar to that $40 Buffalo Trace bottle you buy off the shelf.
Nope. But nope. If you tell me that it's expensive, take my money. Take my money. Let's go. So.
That's good. It's really sweet. I've said this before, and I'm going to keep reiterating it so people know, because I keep seeing the blasphemy on Facebook and Instagram all over the place where someone shows you their glass of whiskey with 1,000 ice cubes in it. Ice cube, so a drop of water, singular small ice cube, not a big deal. Cheaper, like lower end whiskey, you get the whiskey balls, whatever, that's fine. But to experience the whiskey the way it's intended to be consumed, you gotta have it neat. Especially the higher proof whiskeys, that's where all the flavor comes out when it's warm and then continues to warm further as you sip on it. This is a prime example of that because it smells incredibly sweet. And even though it's 114 proof, which could be high for some folks, the average is 90 proof. you get a shit ton of different flavors like right off the bat. It's not as smooth, I think, as I would have liked. I've had others, like the Wild Turkey one is sort of my benchmark now for smooth whiskeys, but that's also really hard to get. It was a one-time run, and now they've kind of moved off from that. This does have a little bit more of a bite than I would have liked, but you can pick up the sort of that weeded flavor right off the bat, and whatever it's, I don't know, it's like the oak or whatever it's aged in comes through right off the bat, and then you get left with like this nice mellow sort of sweetness on the back, which is really pleasant. Not something I generally, I'm not the biggest fan of weeded whiskeys. Especially this one where it's weeded and full proof. It's got a little extra punch to it. And it doesn't come out quite as sweet as what you would hope for a lot of the higher end proofs, but keep trying to read the back of this while I'm sipping on it, but I'm going to give this, I'm going to give it a 7.8.
7.8. All right.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. But for the cost, I don't know if I would throw my money down for it unless I had an opportunity to get it for like a Raz or some sort of online
or something. Yeah. Goats. Totes my goats. All right, that's what's in our cup this week. Let's talk a little sports here. Formula One is back, and holy shit, did it start with a bang. If you're a big fan of Netflix's Drive to Survive, right? New season, absolutely great, fantastic. However, it was upstaged. Right before testing began in Bahrain, all these stories start coming out. Hey, Lewis Hamilton, he's not going to be with Mercedes after next year. Like, well, you're fucking crazy. He's been with them. He's won 7 World Driver Championships. There's no way. And you're like, nah, he's going to Ferrari. And you're like, no, this isn't, this is like something that's on the Reddit boards. You know what I mean? It's not really like reputable. Then all the sports stories, and none of these folks on Twitter, because I'm going to continue to call it that, none of these folks on Twitter have been posting incorrect links. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And then he announces it. He announces that he's going to transition to Ferrari in 2025. This is his last year with Mercedes, ending a truly awe-inspiring, wonderful run. And yep, as you would imagine, Drive to Survive definitely gives you pretty much everything except for the announcement, because they didn't know about it when they were filming at the time. But he was talking about, you know, there was a scene where he's talking to the team principal, Toto Wolff, and he's like, well, what are we gonna do about a contract? And, you know, Hamilton says, like, you can be here for another 20 years. Like, I can't, like, I'm a driver, I have a timetable. Like, Sir Lewis is in his 40s, and you know, he believes that his 8th World Driver Championship was taken from him. I agree. Right. So, like, if he's not going to be in a car, because Mercedes has been lagging around for years now, if there's not going to be changes in the car, he's got to go to where it is. Lewis driving for a Ferrari should absolutely scare the bejesus out of Red Bull. But speaking of Red Bull, they got their own drama llama going on. Did you see this shit, Tim?
I have not. This is your segment. I'm just living in it. Right. Oh. This is your world right now.
Let me wax poetic like Chris Berman. He could go all the way. That's what Christian Horner tried to do, because the text messages that he allegedly sent to a member of the Red Bull team of sexual harassment in nature and some of the cringiest shit you've ever going to see. Guy's married to a fucking Spice Girl. I do not get it. I don't. I really don't. There's no need for you to do that. He's on top of the world. He's got a 3-time world champion. Could be a 4-time world champion this year, because the way the season started off, Max won by 18 plus seconds. So, like, no one else has figured out the car yet. So Red Bull is slipping. There are very active reports, even the Worldwide Leader has reported on this, that Jos Verstappen, Max Verstappen's father, has met with Mercedes and is like, hey, let's go to dinner. Let's talk about what the future looks like. Meaning, fuck Red Bull. We out. Yeah. And the amount of stuff behind the scenes, I mean, Ford, who is going to be their motor sponsor, their engine sponsor going forward, has been very clear about this investigation, which Red Bull hired an independent arbiter to figure out. Ford was like, we don't think this has been transparent enough, and we implore you to be more transparent about what's going on. Christian Horner obviously is saying he denies the whole thing. He and his wife, Jerry, did a nice little public solidarity display at the race. At least that's what it seemed like. Red Bull's teetering here. Red Bull was a 4-time driving, you know, constructor champion back in the day before Mercedes dominated. And honestly, had Hamilton been the only news of this week, we'd have been okay with that. But dysfunction within the team of Red Bull, I mean, everybody loves to see this. Alpine. Currently, they have a 24% ownership stake with Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhenney, Travis Kelce is part of that ownership group. They, between the last season, fired their team principal. New high up people in the team are resigning. Like, there's so much turmoil. Like, the season, the race was pretty boring, but the season itself has actually started out pretty crazy. And I hope that Drive to Survive season 7 is even more crazy than season 6, because it's fantastic. I'm not sure if you watched Drive to Survive. You obviously watched Full Swing. Full Swing starts season 2 tomorrow.
Yes.
Where we're finally going to see the whole transition.
Live drama. Off. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be good. You're forgetting one major story. And as a non-participant in the F1 fandom, the allegations against the FIA or from the FIA some tampering.
Mm-hmm.
That's explain that a little bit, because I've seen it kind of in passing, but it sounds like someone was tinkering with the finish. I don't understand how you can tinker with the results.
The race ended up. So FIA, the governing body of Formula One, mm-hmm. has a number of high profile people on it. And generally they make CEO type level decisions, right? To keep the sport and the brand as valuable as possible. Formula One's one of the most valuable brands recently in the world, thanks to Netflix's absolutely atmospheric drive. But Mohammed bin Sulayman, who is the F1 president, if you could say that, there's been some complaints that he improperly assessed, mm-hmm. you know, the finish to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix last year, which is terrible. I mean, that's always been, like, if you're a Sir Lewis fan, you've been like, this was manipulated. You know, not this year, but the year before, you're like, you know, Lewis should have had 8. Michael Massey didn't uphold the ruling. And you always kind of wonder if there's some shadow puppets like pulling the strings, and this does not help. Like I said, there's just so much craziness that's going on. I don't know too much about how this whole governing structure works, because I tend to not really care what the FIA does, because the FIA wanted to race in Russia when Russia was invading Ukraine, right? Mm. The FIA would have the Chinese Grand Prix, even though China, you know, against the Uyghurs, has committed human rights atrocities left and right. The FIA will grow the sport in whichever way possible that's beneficial for them. But as Lewis Hamilton has pointed out, they've not held the race in Africa for quite a while, if ever. So I'm not surprised, I guess is the best way to say it.
Now, do you know what was the race in question? Why was there any sort of controversy at the end of it?
I think it was because of the way penalties were assessed, which ended up with the finishing order. I will have to pull it up here. FIA. As of 2 hours ago, according to The Guardian, he overturned a driver penalty. Yeah. Mm. Whose penalty did he overturn? Let's see this here. Oh, he overturned a 10-second penalty given to Fernando Alonso at the 2023 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
Hmm. Got it.
Oh, boy. So this is the thing, right? So the FIA is the governing body, and then the stewards and race control are the ones who are the referees, basically, and they're the ones keep things going. So if you and I were racing and we happened to crash into each other, right, that incident is referred to the stewards for investigation. And usually what happens is the stewards either send a letter to both of the drivers, to their team principal, and say, hey, you've been called. So, like, after the race, you need to come to this meeting room and, you know, stand on the carpet, basically. They have the authority to levy penalties, to call something a racing incident, which is incidental contact, basically. All of these things are given to a body that's not the FIA, but is managed by the FIA, if that makes sense. So for the president of Formula One to absolve someone's 10-second penalty, now, I mean, it's sort of, if you think about it like this, when you get penalty minutes, like in hockey, you're just not on the floor, right? Or not on the rink. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
But
10 seconds in Formula One, it is a lifetime. It is a long, long time. So,
if you're going 150 miles an hour, 10 seconds
Absolutely. You could be in third place and, you know, have run the entire Grand Prix in, let's say, 58 minutes and 52 seconds. The 15th place finisher could have finished the race in 58 minutes, 59 seconds, for example. So there is a massive sway by how long that time penalty. typically what happens in a lot of these races is the stewards will give someone a 5-second penalty for impeding, and that usually costs someone a podium, which is the top three places. So 5 seconds could move you anywhere from 1 through 3 to like 4 through 6. So a 10-second penalty, you're pretty much in the middle to lower part of the grid for that race, potentially out of scoring range for points. So because the top 10 drivers get points, 25 for first, and then descending all the way down to 1 point for 10th place. So that's a big deal.
Holy shit. An F1 car can hit a top speed of 200 to 220 miles per hour, mm-hmm. or 322 to 354 kilometers per hour. Not unaided by DRS concept since it was introduced in 2001. That's quick enough to cover a full mile in less than 10 seconds. That is unreal.
Yeah. Flat out. I mean, it is pretty incredible. I will say that the production value of the races have gone so far high up. If you watch some of the old Formula One races, it's a lot of commentary and it's not a lot of analysis. And, oh boy, it's a lot different these days. So I'm glad that you asked me that question. I looked it up now. Yeah, you can't be doing that. That's sort of like stop the count. We don't like the way this is going. Like, we want to see the people at the top. Like, this is what's going to essentially kill the fans from transitioning to the sport. And it might also prevent, because there's only 20 F1 drivers in the world, right? 10 teams. It is going to expand to, I think, 11 or 12 teams. But like, you're still talking about 24 drivers at the end of the day in one of the most heavily watched and one of the richest sports in the world. You cannot be tinkering with the results, because the minute people think that it's WWE, you're not going to have races in Monaco. You're just not. People are going to say, this isn't worth it anymore.
And it seems like he's just constantly under fire. I'm just looking through. I'm thumbing through some of these.
Let's be honest. He's been a lightning rod for a lot of controversy, which is why I don't really pay attention to him anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not surprised. He approved the track or leaned for approving the track, even though it wasn't going to be ready by the time it was inspected. He's underplaying the commercial value, according to some rights holders for the F1, Liberty Media. This guy looks like just a dumpster fire so far. He's only been holding that position since 2021. So, yeah, it's definitely something worth following along.
Yeah, it is a tightrope. You know, the people who are the team principals, the people who are in the FIA, every one of those people has like a Roger Goodell type job that they have to do, keeping this multi-billion-dollar operation running every single year. And Liberty Media, the American rights owner of Formula One, almost an overwhelming majority, I think. I mean, I saw something recently. There's been a leak that someone applied for a Chicago F1 trademark. So we may have a fourth race in the United States at some point in the future. I mean, F1 is here to stay. It is capitalizing on the fame of the moment, but it's also like forgetting how to do the day-to-day stuff, like fighting with their drivers around the wearing of jewelry in the car. Like, who the fuck cares? Just let it go. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not that important. Oh, it's about the driver's safety. If Lewis Hamilton wants to put 3 plugs in his nose, I think Lewis Hamilton knows what he's doing, right? If he wants to wear a Rolex, I mean, it's extra weight, so I don't think he would do it, right? But this silly stuff that we're talking about here.
And these cars are going so fast. If they're going to crash, it's not going to be the nose ring or the necklace that's going to cause the harm. It's going 200 miles an hour into an unmovable object.
Which happened a couple years ago, actually, with a Haas driver, Roman Grosjean. He went right through a barrier that wasn't supposed to move. The car split in half. The back part of the car, which had the engine and the fuel, lit on fire. And if you get a chance, you should definitely look up the first interview he gave with Sky Sports, where he said he pushed up like on the halo, which is the part in the front of the race car that keeps the driver's head from being decapitated. He's like, he pushed up and there's smoke and fire and everything. And he pushed up. He couldn't get down. He tried to go left. He tried to go right. Couldn't get out of the car. And he said, mate, I thought this was it. Like, he said that out loud. He was like, I thought I was never going to see my kids again. You know what I mean? And then like, for whatever reason, he was able to get up and like push through. And like, there was a huge investigation that went into that. And like, the cars have been made much better, but cars have flipped and gone careening straight into walls on their roof. And like, if the halo wasn't there, the driver would no longer be with us. Like, there's so much that Formula One does right in putting a show on. It also does so wrong in like driver safety, culture, and Ben Solomon's not not been great at that.
Yeah. What's crazy, if you've never had a chance to, I'm not you particularly, but anybody listening who's never had a chance to do it, see if you can play a Formula One game, because what people don't understand is that, I mean, it's incredibly hard to drive these things, but that halo he's talking about is, it's like a roll bar that goes over your head, but the mount point in the front is a beam that literally comes down directly in your line of sight. So the whole time you're racing, you can't, there's an impediment directly in front of you. So you're driving this car 200 miles an hour with a bar that's about, I don't know, 3 inches wide and I don't know, 5 or 6 inches long, right in your field of view. It'd be like someone laying a baseball bat on your windshield while you're driving on your morning traffic.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yep. It's crazy.
Exactly. So this last week and this upcoming weekend are the only weekends where the race will not be on Sunday morning, as Ramadan starts Sunday. Mm-hmm. So these two past races are in the Middle East, and then they will be on the road. One of the best races you should watch every year is the Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. It happens. It's the American Grand Prix. It happens in October. Perfect weather. And they take what used to be a NASCAR track, and they make it into something that's incredible. And I think it's one of the best races. So, I mean, definitely watch that, Drive to Survive. And ESPN, incredible content. Every Sunday morning starts at like 7 or 8:55 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's great. You get up, you watch a Formula One race, have a cup of coffee, go about your day.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I can't finagle my way down to one of these.
Well, just trying to see if I can't finagle my way to be in your checked luggage, but
all right, okay. All right, let's transition on onto some dead weight, shall we?
Oh, unbelievable. This NFL offseason already has been kind of crazy. I just want to say something. I know I have been a Russ stan on this podcast for a long time, but even I did not see things getting to where they are right now.
Right.
The Denver Broncos basically said, we signed you to a 5-year extension. We ain't paying you a cent of it. It's not happening. We're going to pay $86 million for the next 2 seasons for you not to play for us. Go play for someone else in the vet minimum. I don't think that there has been a fall from grace as bad as this, except for maybe Cameron Jarrell Newton. Like, the amount of, hey, a few years ago, this guy was in Seattle. He was great, right? And then he tried to fire both his coach and his general manager to the owner. And then they're like, hey, we got to move you. So he goes to Denver, has a couple down seasons. New coach comes in. Doesn't like Russ's shit, and then pretty much out he goes. The NFL cap is $245 million this year, and Russ is going to count an absurd amount against that to not play. And this NFL team is just like
$85 million to be
and
exact.
And the team is like, fuck it, whatever. Bye. Like, there's this weird debate that's going on right now, and I know you've seen it. It's in all of the clickbait articles. It's been debated on every one of the morning sports talk shows. Like, the debate is Russ a Hall of Famer? This is my take on it. I won't even put too much time. No. If the Hall of Fame debate is you need 2 Super Bowl wins and he doesn't get into the Super Bowl win and he also doesn't play in the league this year, he's not going to take a year off and then find a way magically back into the league, right? It doesn't work that way. I mean, Cam definitely found a way to rebound, but like, it didn't work out for him in the end. Like, you have to strike when the iron's hot. And if the knock against Russell Wilson is that he is going to go rogue, going to do his own thing because he believes that he's a football player that he's not, it's not going to work. There will be quarterbacks that come out every single year. They're going to be better. And then we're just going to get into this constant cycle about, oh, is Russ good? Is Russ good? If he doesn't sign to a team in free agency, and my answer is no, he's not a Hall of Famer. Like, and that pains me to say, because like, I would have taken a metaphorical bullet for that dude in Seattle when I lived out there, when they were going to Super Bowls, even after, when you could clearly sell, you know, the team that was a great team, but they were falling backwards. And he's still like he goes on the I Am Athlete podcast. He's like, I want to win 2 more. Russ, you need to stay on a fucking team for more than 2 seasons. Okay. Like, let's not put the cart before the horse here. I love your enthusiasm. I love how positive you want to be. You have gotten yourself to a position where like, this is you now. If you're all about doing the work, like, go do the work. Like, stop talking about it.
Man, I'm looking at what he he's going to get paid $39 million by Denver unless he signs with another team. Basically, it'll be less whatever he signs for. So some team is going to pick him up and say, we're going to pay you whatever the vet minimum is. I don't know what that equates to. Yeah,
it's like $1.21 million.
Yeah, someone's going to sign him because they only have to pay him $1 million, and the Broncos are going to be on the hook for the other $38 million of that. So he's going to end up somewhere, whether it's a starter or a backup. I don't know. I really, really, really hope he doesn't become a Patriot, because I don't think that's the answer to what their problems are. They either need to start over or...
If Bill was still there, that's a definite possibility, but nope.
Yeah, I don't know if they're necessarily in like a rebuild. I don't think they are, but I know there's plenty of teams out there that could use a decent quarterback. I mean, if Aaron Rodgers for some reason isn't ready to go week one, I could see them maybe bringing in Rodgers, because he's definitely a better quarterback than what they've got going right now. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. There's definitely a market for him at that cheap price. But I guess it depends on who it is that comes knocking. He may get I know Bill's still not on a team. I think that's more out of choice. I think he just didn't align with whatever his demands were being met. He didn't like the demands that were being made of him. So he just decided maybe to call it a career and join someone in the booth. I don't know what that scenario is. But I could see Russ. I mean, there's a lot of money in the commentator game now.
Nope.
So
nope, you're never gonna hear me. You're never gonna hear me make this comparison. So please, hopefully, you're sitting down for this. All right.
Okay.
So, the fasten your seatbelt sign has been put on by the pilot. I'd rather listen to fucking Tom Brady on a Mickey Mouse voice level than hear Russell Wilson talk about fucking Tom Brady, because Russell Wilson can't talk about the sport. Russell Wilson would only talk about himself. He can't break down the play, because what he does is it's so cerebral. It's up in his head that he thinks through it.
Like, yeah.
Go back and watch any of the Russ mic'd up segments. It's cringy. He just keeps repeating the same thing. All right, dedication, man. Hard work, baby. Let's go. All day, baby. All day. It's like, no, dude, come on.
What the fuck? I haven't listened to any of his like long form interviews, like any of the podcasts he's been on, so I can't speak to any of that. I could see him doing maybe like getting roped into like college broadcasting or something on those lines. I mean, I'm genuinely excited to hear Tom Brady's take,
because I think
he's going to come in, I think, a little spicy. You got a little taste of that when he was talking about a lot of the celebration of the mobile quarterback. And I know we talked about that a little bit before, where a lot of them are mobile because they're not able to read the plays correctly, so they have to rely on it. And in his mind, he's like, well, why did you even snap the ball then? Like, I can't wait for some of that. I don't think Russ has that in him. I don't think he sees the game the same way some of the higher levels. And what's really challenging for him is that he's essentially reporting to arguably one of the other best quarterbacks to ever play in Peyton Manning, who's calling a lot of those shots. So if he's up there looking, and if you ever watched Peyton's plays or you saw him on any of his simulcasts for any of the football games of the last year, he's also incredibly gifted in terms of seeing the game in real time and discussing it. So if that's the guy who is overseeing your paycheck and he's watching you, he decides to cut you, I don't think that bodes well for what the outlook of your future is, because I mean, a team's going to sign it because they're desperate. Like, you could go 100%. To like the Panthers or
the Falcons.
Falcons. Although rumor has it, the Falcons could be signing Justin Fields. Like, there's all kinds of. I mean, it's a very interesting time in the market, and I know there's a lot of quarterbacks who could potentially be on the move. I mean, unfortunately, I could see the Pats taking a chance on him if they sign him to like a 1 year.
Of the fucking Patriots fans who were like, oh, what'd you give it to Marshawn in the Super Bowl? What? And now you'd be like, oh, Russ is great. You're like, shut the fuck up. Russ.
No one is going to say he's great. Everyone is going to look at that as a questionable signing. But I could see them doing that depending on who they take in the draft. I could see them using Russ as sort of the punching bag of a developmental year, right? I don't think they want to take the Mac Jones approach and rush whoever it is into the quarterback position and risk blowing up another future prospect. They have two quarterbacks on their team that, you know, with a couple weapons and some changes, could probably squeak out a 500 season. So they may not be quite as in a hurry to make those kind of changes. I don't think the Broncos are going to trade Russ for like a Zappy or a Mac Jones.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Pats are going to go into it with three quarterbacks and dead weight. So unless they move one of those guys, I'm sure they're going to take somebody in the first round, hopefully, a quarterback in the first round now that Bill's out. Although I see a little note in the show notes here. We'll talk in a second. Doesn't exactly seem like Bill had the reins like we thought he did, according to some of these. Like there's a couple media outlets, if you will, have put out stories kind of accusing this as a hit job on Bill Belichick. And I got to say, some of it feels that way a little, where he kind of took a lot of ownership of kind of what was going on. But then when the buck got passed around, nobody else, a lot of folks were kind of pointing back towards Bill as being the reason for some of it. It's interesting. I'm an episode behind. I haven't seen the one from last Friday.
So for everyone who can't see the show notes, he's talking about the Patriots series on Apple Plus. It's called Dynasty. I think. I mean, dude,
it's phenomenal.
I'm a big Patriots hater. Yeah. I watched those first two episodes that came out. I was like, all right, I'm in. All right. Like my arms are crossed, like literally Homer Simpson on the couch, like just all pissed off. I'm like, hit play. We're going to watch just the next episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, 11:30,
12 o'clock at night. I'm like, whatever. Play it the next episode.
I loved the insight that we got from some of it, right? Like how blown out of proportion Spygate was. Yeah. Did they do something fucked up? Sure. But when they literally stripped everything from them, asked the video director, like, how important is this? The coordinators and the coaches, how important is this in your grand scheme on a scale of 1 to 10? And they're like 1%. And their response was to come out the next season and just fucking destroy everybody. They came out with a purpose. Even though they lost, you know, they went 16-1, they were beating teams by historic numbers the entire season and refused to take their foot off the gas. It was like, nope, we're putting up 40 to 50 points every game to show you that that isn't why we were winning games. We were winning games because we're the better team who's more prepared. It is what it is. And that level of insight was like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah. I mean, having to listen to, I know they're going to do one on Deflategate coming soon, but having to like hear some of that and what was going on, it is tough to kind of relive through all of that, right? But
not tough if you're
not a fan. Yeah, but like we know signals are changed every fucking game. Sometimes they're changed at halftime. There's literally guys on the sidelines there to like read lips. That's why they think there are. That's why they're covering their mouths all the time. So like at the end of the day, how much of a competitive advantage did that ultimately end up being? They figured it out the following season without needing any video. So I don't think much, but phenomenal series. If you're not watching it, I would definitely. I love how it's completely uncensored, unfiltered.
Love
like
it.
Dropping F bombs everywhere. People are kind of like speaking their truth, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they took basically like a football life and they just said, what if we actually did this the way that we know people wanted to see this instead of producing it for 60 minutes and trying to crunch and get all the stories in there? So, you know, one thing I think that Patriots dynasty, you know, to juxtaposition and make it about the combine, it made the combine look silly for years. Right. And you got Caleb Williams, who's like, nah, you're not going to measure me. Nah, I'm not going to do medical for any team except the ones I think I'm going to. Like, there's a lot of, I'm the fucking alpha and you will fucking kowtow to my request. And it's like, I would have loved for the Patriots under Bill Belichick to have that number two pick and then not give an invite to Caleb Williams. The amount of shit, the amount of money I would have paid for them to do that just to just generate the buzz. Like, there seems to, and it's not NIL, it's not any of that other shit. Like, it just has to come from the fact that the player now at the combine is like, yeah, I'm not participating in the underwear Olympics. I'm not throwing it at the combine. I'm gonna only throw it my pro day. Yeah, you're only gonna throw it your pro day to receivers that you know and have chemistry with, to a script that you've been practicing for weeks, if not months on end. Like, the point about the combine is to make you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's to put you in a position just like you would be as a fucking rookie in training camp. You and the guys you used to hate because you were rivals in the SEC or the Big Ten or whatever, and now you got to throw the football to them.
Yep.
Are you really about the sport, or are you about whatever you were in college? And again, it does kind of separate like those juveniles from the people who are like super mature. Is Caleb Williams going to be the fucking number one pick? Probably. Should he be the number one pick? Don't give a fuck. Is Caleb Williams the best quarterback in his draft? Probably not, right? But yeah. He has the Heisman. Jaden McDaniels from LSU, he got the Heisman. He had an incredible season. And if Caleb Williams had gone back-to-back Heismans, this would not even be a question. It's number one, ink it, right? But like the amount of hype and discourse around Caleb Williams, like, I'm sorry. I am fucking UW, and UW dog walked him in a boat race. And then after that, he said, I want to go home and just, you know, cry with my cat and talk to my mom. They fucking mollywopped him. This is the guy you want leading your franchise? This is the guy who's like, nah, you know what? Like, he has that Dion, like, arrogance. Yeah. But I don't think that he has necessarily the stats to back it up, because he really struggled in the Pac-12 this year on the way out. And, like, I think that there's something about that. Like, you're a flash in the pan, bro. And I'm not saying you're going to be Cam Newton in the league, but, dude,
I'm struggling some of that here is, with this dude. Yeah, I think some of that is going to come back to bite him, for real, because I've already heard that his capital is dropping. Like, mm-hmm. teams are becoming a little uninterested. Like, it raises a red flag. No, I'm not doing your medical checks. Like, some of the rumors as to why are wild. I guess some insiders are saying it's, you know, something as silly as being uncircumcised, and the statistics of formerly uncircumcised quarterbacks and how they panned out was really bad. And you know, this is, I know, but you know, this is as a stat driven league. So let's say you have four uncircumcised quarterbacks in the last 10 years, and all of them. I know. Listen. I'm going down. We're putting the tinfoil hat on. This is not our belief system. I'm just discussing what some of the rumors are around it. But because everyone is so enamored with statistics and how trends work and whatnot, we'll say fellows like him, let's say four of them in the last 15 years, and they were all busts. It then draws in cause and correlation and whether or not that's, I don't know, I'm not buying any of that. I think it's just there's some other red flag or something there that he wants to be able to speak with teams prior to having this medical examination. It's the only thing I can think of. This isn't like a vaccination, unvax type scenario, right, because
it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, and it's not like that's what they're looking for. They want to make sure you're healthy, you're you know, not at risk of any sort of short term malfunctions that are going to cause you to not be able to participate with your team. But
yeah,
this draft class in general is just wild. We had the fastest recorded ever. You had this guy
time with Xavier Worthy, a wide receiver.
Yeah.
4.25 unofficial first time, and then he's like, nah, that's not enough. I'm going to go back. I can run faster. Runs 4.22 to tie John Ross, University of Washington, wide receiver. And then they're like, nah, it was unofficial 4.22. We lasered it.
Yeah. 4.22. And what was...
He ran out the stadium. I was like, this is incredible. Good.
And then you got the one dude who
the big old lineman.
No, the oh my god, what was his name? The one who came out in his post game or his post combine conversation saying, "I don't believe in space. We live in a dome.
Oh yeah, the
planets aren't real." And you're like,
"Yeah,
that's this is a college kid coming from college."
Well,
and I get, I can't
a Noble sweatshirt.
Well, that's because, no, yeah, Noble sponsored. Tom Brady led. Tom Brady beating his 40 time at 40 years old is pretty impressive to see. But yeah, there's something like, okay, you can kind of hide behind the guise of religion if you want, because I have never heard this before until the last year, but supposedly in the Bible somewhere, or in a variation of the Bible, it talks about living in a dome, and that's not what people are holding on to. So this kid thinks we live in a dome. Space isn't real. The sun is local. It's not
just hangs out. It can melt your face off, but it just hangs out. It goes to the other town every night. What the
fuck? Yeah, and I've seen videos of this where like people are riding on bikes and they think the sun is local because it's kind of following them. I'm like, yeah, but there's 8 billion other people. Is it following them? So like, I don't understand the concept here. So for a college kid to come out and say that during his interview, unfortunately, has to draw a lot of red flags. Because you're like, all right, I can't hold your religion against you. Obviously, that's your preference. But then when we start talking about your beliefs in science and whatnot, then does it stem to like your medical beliefs? And now you have to worry about whether you're going to get proper support from your training. I know Aaron Rodgers kind of set the stage for that.
Had someone sneeze on you who had COVID.
Yeah, or like even removed from like the vaccination conversation, are you going to allow medical staff to treat injuries or prescribe medications or any of that? Or is this like, I don't believe in any science? Aaron Rodgers tried that shit and said he would be back in the league by like week 7 and we never saw him again. So obviously we all humbled it and everyone knew he would be out for the season, if not longer, even though he talked a very big game about being back and being ready to go and apparently running. Yeah. We saw that on the field. No, we did not.
Yeah. He's running in that Formula One game. He got the controller on sensitivity. But
yeah.
I don't get it there. This is your first big TV moment in the NFL lexicon, right?
Yep.
And when you own a certain day of the week, like college football does on Saturdays, and you're given all those post-game interviews and you give these softball fucking questions. Yeah. I would love to be a fly on the wall on some of these teams, interview questions, and then just scribble and take notes. I'd like wear sunglasses, like that Tom Brady meme you showed earlier. I'd have a big top hat, this is the Cam Newton episode, like a Cam Newton top hat. You know what I mean? With his obnoxious glasses. I take notes in the corner, right?
Tearing everyone down who's still in the league, even though he's of league age and is not in the league. Yeah.
It is what it is, right?
Tyler Owens, by the way, that's the player.
Like, is J.J. McCarthy really a top quarterback? He's better than Michael Penix Jr.? I don't really know about that because in the national championship, wasn't him that was throwing the touchdown passes. It was duo of the running backs. Why is Michael Penix Jr. getting all the hate for his medical, right? He's out there slinging at the combine. He's throwing it. He's having a great time. Like, there is something about the combine that, like, is necessary. You need it because it's that first big open the gates moment for the players to allow them to sort of be themselves and see what kind of choices they make. Mm-hmm. Some of them make really bad choices. That guy who said that space isn't real, that's if he doesn't make it in the league, that's all he's going to be known for. Good for you, boss. Glad you said that. Hope you got a good NIL deal. Hope you get a first-round contract, because when that money's gone, you're the guy who doesn't believe birds are real. That's it. So, like, I can't really feel bad. You know what I mean? Like, the combine is, like, it's very good for a reason, but, oof.
Yeah,
it does need some changes, though. I mean, the gauntlet's kind of easy. Like, you just got to run in a straight line. Like, I need you to do some zigzagging back and forth. Like, I love to see the defensive drills when they have to figure out which way the ball carrier is going, and they got to slap the big tall, I don't even know what you call them, like cones around. I love seeing that stuff. The 40, kind of outdated. The bench press, kind of outdated. But you know what? It's raw power. I come from the old school army where you had to do 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes sit-ups, run 2 miles. You could pass it easily. But if you were that guy that did like 75 push-ups, then you're like, oh shit, I got to go and I got to max everything else. Like, you were probably not a good soldier if you maxed your PT test, but you maxed the PT test. Like, that's what the combine's for. They're like, hey, can you only just lift weights and run in a straight line? Or can you run back and forth? Right? And, you know, it's an equalizer in a way that people are talking about, like that guy Xavier Worthy is now like a first rounder now. He wasn't before, but now he's going to go 32nd overall to the Kansas City Chiefs because he ran 4.21. I would love to see that dude in the Kansas City Chiefs, by the way, but I don't want to get hyped up because all these goddamn mock drafts are already coming out and it's too much. We're well over a month away from the draft.
It would have been interesting to see how he performed because he was talking a big game saying he would run like a 4.2 something. And, I mean, I guess he was like a star track and field athlete. I think I saw that he set a record or came close to the record or something in the long jump. But when it came time to run his 40 yard, he ended up getting injured midway through that run. So, we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, he went all in and said, like, flat earther now, saying that he used to believe we revolved around the sun, but that people on the internet have made valid points. So
no, they haven't, because people in 1546, you know, AD, like Copernicus, can prove this guy wrong. If they can convince the entire world we build Gregorian calendars off of it, you're not smarter than them.
Yeah. I just wish I could take a hot air balloon up and see France from my house. That'd be cool. I'll just do that.
If it's flat, you just got to keep going higher and higher and higher, right? You must be able
higher to see and higher it. And get one of those space telescopes. Oh, dude, we could solve this problem right now. One of those guys.
The space isn't real.
One of those guys gets into one of these, like, telescopes that let you see the face of the moon, right? Go up in a hot air balloon, point that shit out, and see what you're looking at in a straight line. Tell me if you can see other parts of the world.
I just got a question. For the, the astronauts that actually go to space and risk their life and sit there and watch the Earth change underneath them, how's that possible, right?
How many of them daydream of floating around that satellite and just a giant meteor just while they're watching it, after they read some of these news articles, they're like, you know what?
We're not worthy.
We're not worthy to be here. Let's just destroy.
Oh man,
it. Yeah,
that's crazy. Right. Let's finish this episode of Stats and Render by talking about Celtics come out to play.
That's a word reference
if you don't get it. And
yeah, I was gonna say the 800 Celtics right now.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. With
well, they Jason. Lost tonight.
Well, okay. So what? Yeah. $7.99
This is crazy.
This is current.
I feel like every time we talk about the
Celtics, at 800.
Yeah, every time we talk about the Celtics, bad shit happens. So like, if we talk about them and then they tumble, then we know that we can't talk about them on the pod anymore, because that's just what's going to happen. We're just going to talk about them in the preseason and the postseason. That's it. If this happens after this episode comes out and they start sucking it up, then we're it. We're the problem. But since the start of the new year, dropped 145 in the Raptors, beat the Mavericks by 9, got shellacked by the Bucks, 135-102, Dame time, dropped 143 on the Heat, beat the Mavs again by, checks notes, 28, dropped 145 on the Raptors. Are you seeing a trend here? Like, yep. Offense, straight up ruined the Warriors, okay? 140-88. 88 points, Tim. The fucking Golden State Warriors scored 88 points. They said, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to leave Jaylen Brown by himself. We're not even really going to guard him. How the fuck did that work for you, Steve Kerr? They lost the Lakers 114-105. I hate that shit because the Lakers are not really that great of a basketball team. They barely held off the Pelicans 118-112 and the Pacers 129-124. They lose by 2 to the Nuggets, which, I mean, come on, the Nuggets. And then they've lost to the Pacers and the Rockets by 2 and 4 points before losing to the Cavaliers tonight. I struggle so much, Tim, with the fact that, like, when this team is on, they are fucking on and they are Leviathans. But when they are off just a tiny bit, who knows? Like,
well, I haven't looked to see what the stat line for tonight is, or more so who played tonight. Because, I mean, Let me see if I can find out who played tonight, because the Cavs, I mean, we can't be shitting on the Cavs. They're sitting in third place right now in the Eastern Conference, so we can't give them too much grief. It's not like they're
out blowing away. You can't lose to an NBA champion by 2 points and then lose to someone third in your conference.
I mean,
like, there's so much history there. Like,
they lost by a point. Tatum still put up 38. Porzingis put up 32. No, these are minutes. Sorry. Tatum, I don't think, played the entire game. 13 rebounds, 20.
Is this an in-season rest game? You know what I mean? Because.
I think they played the full game, because the scoring leaders are Porzingis, Tatum, and Brown. Yeah, they played
the regular game. Before the Celtics had ever won 3 games by 50 or more. The Celtics have done it. Mm-hmm. And then they lose these games that are head scratchers, and you're like, no, you should not have lost that game. Like, it's crazy to me to think that you can go on an 11-game winning streak and then lose by 1 point to a team in the Eastern Conference. Like, come on, dude. Like,
I think you're, in my opinion, being a little too harsh, because I, like,
absolutely.
They lost by a game. I mean, a point. It's not like they got blown out. So they almost, I mean, an 11 game streak is insane. You're not going to win every game that you're playing. So I'll take a 1 point loss to the third place in your division. Why not? I mean, it's a team. I think the Cavs are 40-21. So they've only lost eight. Was it? Eight or nine more games than the Celtics have. We're sitting at 40-13. So stretch that over a 16 game period. That's a lot closer than what it actually looks like. The 40-21 to 48-13. So like a close game. I'm going to give them close games. If they came in, they got their ass kicked, that'd be a different story. But they've been on.
But when they've been off, they've gotten. I don't want to say outcoached, right? Because I've not watched enough of the games this season to really, The Bachelor's on, watching Love is Blind. I got priorities, right? Trying to read more books. You know what I mean? I'm trying to watch less sports.
Love is Blind. What the hell is wrong with you guys?
Look,
CBS Sports had that. Another conversation, but Love is Blind, that's unreal.
Absolutely. Yeah, anyways, the best produced season that they've done thus far. The next season is going to be D.C. CBS Sports said in their power rankings, remember a couple weeks ago when Kristaps Porzingis was like, don't worry if we're not beating everyone by 30 anymore. Well, the Celtics started beating everyone by 30 again. Actually, they beat the Warriors by 52 on Sunday, their 11th straight win and their third by 50 or more points this season, which no other NBA team has done. Boston's net rating for the season is now higher than the Kevin Durant, Steph Curry 2016-2017 Warriors. This is what scares me. Fans should just worry about the playoffs later and enjoy this all-time great regular season team. Nope. Mm-mm. Nope. Don't give a fuck about the regular season. Nope. Like, just so you can lose in the divisional round of the playoffs. Nope. No. Like, if this Boston team, after having all this hype, does not go super deep into the playoffs and be the Eastern Conference representative in the NBA Finals, we have to have a conversation. I don't want you to be the regular season GOAT. You don't need to be the regular season GOAT if you get bounced in the playoffs or you don't make it to the big dance. I don't need your best basketball in March. I need your best basketball when it counts in the postseason, in the NBA Finals. And this team has had, we talked about it every year. This team has had a habit of losing games they have no business losing and sometimes winning games that they really shouldn't have. And then that comes back to bite them. Now, the team has shuffled around things a bit. It's a, new coach, I don't know. What do you even call Brad Stevens? Because he's like the guy that owns the building, but he still lives upstairs. You know what I mean?
It's just like the GM. Isn't he the GM?
He can make whatever decision he wants, right? Like, he's still pretty much got his fingerprints all over that team. And I love what this team is doing, but this just seems to me like we are going for broke. If we make the finals and win, we'll stay together. But if we don't, Brown's getting traded. Right.
I mean,
like, the team's going to get broken up. Something like that. It just seems that's where we are.
I don't know if I agree with that, because they've had sustained success for years and they came close last year and the year before. And like, they don't show any signs of slowing down. So save for some salary issues that might crop up in the offseason, I don't think anyone's in a hurry to get rid of anybody, because they're still like going into the season favorites to win the whole thing. So I'm not buying into if they don't win at all, they're going to blow up the team. I don't think that's how that works. Like, this isn't like a team that's going to blow themselves up is going to be the Warriors, right? The Warriors have had some sustained success and then have struggled the last few years. I wouldn't even remotely close to say the Celtics have struggled. I mean, they put up really close fights against the Heat last year. They ultimately ended up coming short. The year before that, they were competitive. So, I mean, they've been flirting with this thing the entire time on a couple players who have been homegrown, like internally developed players. They brought in some supporting characters like Porzingis this year. They brought in others in the past that have kind of helped, Gordon Hayward and whatnot. But I think this team, they're like one player from really dominating. Already they're really dominating this season. I think in my mind, Tatum right now is the current MVP. I still have him at some crazy long odds for some reason, but I think he's the MVP. I think I would take him over almost anybody else right now if you gave me the option. And I think him and Brown complement themselves perfectly. It'll be whether or not Brown wants more of a starring role than a backup role or, you know, a sidekick role, that's going to be up to him. But I don't think this team's going to force anybody out. Unless they have a historic collapse and miss the playoffs, I don't think any of that's going to happen. It's the chemistry,
I think that would be absolutely insane, right?
But I think the chemistry is just too good. You hear comments from other people around the league, like Luka and everybody. I mean, the entire Golden State bench, how well-rounded and balanced this team is. You'd be an idiot to go in and fuck it up, right? Like, you have been on the cusp of winning a championship the last couple of years, and that's more than what, you know, 50 other teams could even come close to saying. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I don't think we're ready to burn the place down. I don't think there's going to be any questions for anybody going on. I mean, this is their coach's, what, second year? Like, it's... Mm-hmm. It is what it is. I don't think there's any issues there. I think they're doing what they need to do. They're going to lose some games. You're not going to win them all. There's too many games in the season to be this far in and only lose 13 games. Like, you're 13 games. You're four losses away from being in a single digit loss column for the entire first half of the season. Like, how can we not be happy with that? That sounds like some spoiled shit, if I'm being honest. Because, like, you win 11 in a row. You win 11 in a row and cough up one?
I've seen this before. Like, I think that the part that is the most alarming to me is getting gobsmacked by 32 to the Bucks, right? The Bucks have, for a while, it was the Celtics and the Heat that they were like the arch enemies, like in the postseason. Then recently, it's been the Bucks, and they've gone back and forth. And each team will lay haymakers, and one year you're up, and the other year the Bucks are up.
But the Bucks are the second place team, though. What are you talking about? They're the second place team who are underperforming. They should be a phenomenal team.
You're making my point for me, Timmy. No, you're making my point for me.
What we're saying is we're seeing no. I think what we're seeing is flashes of what that team is supposed to be. Like, if you can go up against the best team in the league and put up a good game, that should be more of a scare factor than are the Celtics dropping the ball. When everything's working correctly. I know they've got some issues now. They got new coaches coming in. They got the new coach coming in, and they're trying to get themselves situated. But I'm not gonna be concerned about losing to a second or third place team. If we're talking about like an eighth or ninth place team or someone who's last in the division, that's a different conversation. But these are the same teams they're gonna see in the playoffs. So these are playoff caliber teams that they're gonna go up against. So to kind of discredit any of their ability, that's wild to me. Like, I'm not ready to go
not discredit down that their ability path. I'm just saying that I just feel like they're really, really in dire straits, like with the fact that some of these losses, like, just especially
dire straits, they got like a 12 game lead.
I'm not saying the earth is flat, Tim. I'm just saying
your words, not mine. We're in dire straits. That's pretty. Dramatic.
Jamie, play that. Roll that back. Roll it back, Jamie. Play that again.
That is very dramatic.
You lose some teams you have no business losing to, and I don't want to see the Celtics have to face the Bucks in the conference championship series again. I just don't, because I don't like. The knock against the Bucks has always been, oh, it's just Giannis. Oh, it's just Middleton. Now there's so much more there. And that, like, with all the coaching dysfunction that Milwaukee has going on, they're still able to piece some things together. That will work itself out over time. And then Boston will have a feisty, feisty, feisty Milwaukee team on their hands. And I worry about those types of things. So that's why I'm just trying to psych myself up in the event that, you know, the minute this episode hits and then
dire straits, you're fucking out of your mind. Dire straits, you're out of your mind. That is the least accurate description I would have said. I'd be like, hey, you know, maybe they need to game plan a little better. Hopefully they come up with a better game plan the next time they meet. Say they're in dire straits because they lost the game tonight by a point, and then they lost another game to the second place team. Who has put
they
up
shouldn't have lost over, that game at that point, though.
Who has put up 130 plus points on like seven different teams this season?
Tim, you don't think there's a problem with the defense that you have to score that many points that pretty much prevent a team from being close enough to you to keep the game winnable?
I think the defense on the Celtics is one of the best defenses in the entire league. I bet if we were to
in the regular season, yes. If CBS Sports says you might as well just go ahead and enjoy the best regular season of all time by the Celtics, like
I think what they're saying is we're at the halfway mark of the season. why the fuck are people already freaking out about the playoffs? That's months away. Basketball is the longest season of sports in all of sports. I feel like it lasts 11 months out of the year. And here we are freaking out. Literally, we just had the All-Star break. We are literally at the halfway point. There's another 65, 70 games that we're going to play.
We're in dire straits, Tim. We're in dire
straits. Dire straits. This is insane. I'm going to win the lotto, but miss the jackpot by like 1,000 points, and we're going to be in dire straits. Dire straits.
I just kind of feel like the Celtics.
I can't.
The Celtics are they're a 15-leg parlay, and the first 13 legs have hit. And we just need the last two to fall. And I have a feeling for whatever reason that we're just not going to hit those last two legs in the parlay and miss out on the plus 3,300 odds. You know what I mean? It's just the thing I'm worried about. We don't have to debate it. We can see if the sky doesn't fall, but there's still a lot of basketball left to
play. A lot of basketball. Can they drop the ball? Yes. But are they currently in dire straits in the midst of a 11-1 stretch? No, I'm not going to go and say we're 11-1.
hey, remember those Eagles, right? They were 10-1. They were 10-2, 10-3, 11-3, 11-4, 11-5, 11-6.
That is going to be the title of this podcast. The Celtics are in dire straits, and everyone's going to think we're clickbaiting him because we are. Because Sam said an 11-1 record is in dire straits. Meanwhile, they're holding an 8-game lead and sitting at 800 on the season. That is fucking
but 60 games to go. Come on now.
That is insane. You're insane.
That's just too much. That's just too much. All right, let's end this episode of the Stats Number podcast because apparently Tim and I's friendship is in dire straits.
Yeah.
We don't see sports the right way.
Somebody needs to stop Sam from drinking these barrel-aged beers anymore. This is getting out of control.
This is you. This is your problem. You're like, hey, where's stout beer? I had to drink all my stouts before. Because we're gonna turn the clocks ahead here pretty soon. So, like, winter is over. OVA over. Right? So I got to get rid of all these. I have, like, they're in boxes. I get, like,
or stop being a bitch and drink them all year long. I'm just saying. All right, everybody.
Peace.
Fucking dire straits.